Thank you for the introduction. I'd like to take this moment to acknowledge my co-authors, Dr. Roberts, Dr. Wamashi, Dr. Hardke, and Dr. Miller for their contribution to this research. This presentation will go over an introduction about what is hydrogen sulfide toxicity and why it's become a problem, and then talk about the research objectives. I'll then move into my materials and methods about how we did this research, and then what we found and what conclusions we were able to draw from this. Rice is a key component to Arkansas's economy, bringing in over $6 million annually. Of course, farmers are faced with many constraints and obstacles throughout the growing season. One obstacle that's not very commonly thought of are soil disorders. Hydrogen sulfide toxicity is one soil disorder that we've become interested in over the last few years. This is actually a physiological disorder, though it is often classified as a disease. Hydrogen sulfide toxicity occurs early in the growing season, approximately 2 to 3 weeks after permanent flooding has been established. Hydrogen sulfide is overproduced in the soil, and we think it is due to the excessive sulfate in the root zone, which is then excessively reduced from sulfate to hydrogen sulfide. Symptoms include wilting and appearing drought stress, even though the rice is in a flooded system, yellowing, as you can see clearly in this top photograph, stunting, and the most noticeable symptom is the blackening of the roots, which you can see in the bottom photo. We have blackened roots on the right, and then healthy roots compared to that on the left. This disorder weakens and predisposes the plants for opportunistic diseases to invade, such as crown rot, root rot, and brown spot. Ultimately, the farmer is facing yield loss. The goal of our research was to understand what causes the hydrogen sulfide toxicity to occur and ultimately to develop a solution to this problem. We wanted to look at the physical and the chemical characteristics of soils in Arkansas that are prone to this disorder. Specifically, we wanted to investigate the redox potential as well as the sulfate levels throughout the different locations. We also wanted to observe the effects of sterilization on our soils to see how driven this is by microorganisms. We hypothesized that sulfate concentrations and the redox potential would decline more rapidly and be significantly less in soils that are prone to hydrogen sulfide toxicity. So we acquired soils from three different locations around Arkansas: our Pine Tree Research Station, Hunter, Arkansas, and Hickory Ridge, Arkansas. The field from Hickory Ridge was of particular interest, where we had on the west end of the field hydrogen sulfide toxicity occurring every year when planted to rice. However, the east side of the field sometimes had this disorder occur, so we took samples from both ends of the field. We then classified our soils based on how often hydrogen sulfide toxicity occurs. Our Hunter and HR West locations are where it occurs every year when planted to rice. Our HR East field is where it occurs approximately half the time when planted to rice, and our Pine Tree soil is where it's never been reported. To sterilize our soils, we took half of the soil from each location and steam sterilized it in an autoclave. We did this three times with a three-day rest period between each sterilization. The idea behind this was to allow any microbes that have broken dormancy after the first autoclaving to become active and then be eliminated during the next sterilization time. Our experimental design is a two-factorial complete randomized block design. We had one replication appearing within each block. We had 16 redox sensors, which we placed randomly throughout two reps of the experiment, and we placed one porous ceramic cup sampler in each pot to take soil solution samples. We brought our flood level up to 10 centimeters above the soil surface using deionized water, and we took continuous redox measurements throughout the duration of the experiment. We collected soil solution samples the first and second day after flooding, and then at weekly intervals, and then every other week for the last 6 weeks. We immediately acidified our soil solution with hydrochloric acid and analyzed them on an inductively coupled argon plasma spectrophotometer. Our initial soil test report showed a few different aspects that we found interesting. The first thing we noticed was our percentage of silt between the locations was different. We had more silt in our soils that have had this disorder compared to our Pine Tree soil, which only had 48% silt. We also looked at the sulfur levels and saw elevated sulfur levels in the locations where we have this disorder compared to where we didn't, and we did expect to see this. Our organic matter concentrations, labeled LOI, were pretty consistent between locations. Our iron levels, however, were various between locations, though we did see more iron in our pine tree soil. So this first graph shows the mean redox potential over time. On the x-axis, we have days after flooding. On the y-axis, we have our redox potential in millivolts. We've divided this graph between sterile and unsterile soil to compare the differences in the treatment. On the left, we have sterile soils, and on the right, we have the unsterile soil. The line running across the graph at negative 100 millivolts is the redox potential where sulfate is the terminal electron acceptor, and that is when sulfate is primarily being reduced. So the first thing we noticed from this graph was that our sterilization was not effective. And we concluded this because if it had been effective and no microbes were present, we would not see such a decline in the redox potential over time. However, one rep of our soils did appear to be effective, which is circled in the black. That pine tree soil had a very stable redox potential for the duration of the experiment. We also believe sterilization wasn't effective because we did have weed seeds germinate in our soils. The other thing I'd like to point out with this graph is the spread of data between sterile and unsterile soils. Our unsterile soils all hit that negative 100 redox potential around 21 days after flooding, whereas our sterile soils had a much larger time span for hitting that point. This next graph shows the sulfate concentration in solution over time, again with days after flooding on the x-axis, and our sulfate concentration in milligrams per liter on our y-axis. Again, we've divided this between unsterile and sterile soils, again with the unsterile on the right and the sterile on the left. The different colored lines represent the different locations. So the first thing I'd like to point out with this graph is our starting concentrations of sulfate. As you can see, our sterile soils have an elevated sulfate concentration. We believe that this is due to killing some of the microbes in our sterilization process. This added to our organic sulfur pool, and then microbes that had survived the autoclaving were then able to mineralize this sulfur into sulfate, therefore giving us the increased elevation. The other thing I'd like to point out are the stars on this graph. These represent where each soil hit the negative 100 redox potential. And as you can see, the unsterile soils were fairly consistent around that day 21 period, which is where we would expect to see symptoms of hydrogen sulfide toxicity occurring in the field. We analyzed our data using JumpPro 12, and we did an analysis of variance by day, and our significance level is set at alpha equals 0.05. We used students' t-test to separate our significant means. All of the numbers in red are significant p-values. As you can see, our locations were significantly different from days 21 through 77, sterilization from 7 to 77, and we had a significant interaction between location and sterilization from days 28 to 77. This significant interaction showed us that the sulfate levels reacted differently between locations when sterile and unsterile. So this graph is a visual representation of that interaction, where we have our sterile and unsterile soils on the x-axis and our sulfate concentration on the y. This is occurring from days 28 to 77 consistently in this trend, where our hunter and pine tree soils, when sterilized, have significantly more sulfate than any of the other treatments. We found it interesting that the unsterile soils were all not significantly different from each other and had such little sulfate at that point. We believe that this is due to the population of microbes in these unsterile soils using up more terminal electron acceptors more rapidly, therefore declining our redox potential and reducing more of the sulfate in the soils. Our locations also had a significant difference. However, we saw that the hunter and the pine tree soils were not significantly different for the duration of the experiment, which we did not expect to see. However, the redox potential for the hunter soils did drop to that negative 100 millivolt redox potential before the pine tree soils. We also saw that elevated concentration of iron in our pine tree soil, which may have helped reduce the production of hydrogen sulfide throughout the experiment due to the fact that more terminal electron acceptors were able to be used before getting to the sulfate. We also saw that the sulfate concentrations could bind to that iron and precipitate out as an iron sulfide rather than producing hydrogen sulfide. Our Hickory Ridge locations were not significantly different from each other throughout the experiment, and we believe this is due to the similar starting levels of sulfur in the soil, similar organic matter, and trends in the redox potential being similar. So what we concluded from this study was that this disorder is multi-leveled. Of course, the substrate concentration plays a huge role in whether or not hydrogen sulfide will be produced. The starting levels of sulfate, the amount of organic matter, these are key components to this disorder, as well as different terminal electron acceptors and how much we have of those. Also, microorganisms play a huge role in this, as we saw between our sterile and unsterile treatments. And there are many different types of microorganisms that are responsible for transforming that sulfur in the soils. Our future research is aimed at examining how the soil chemistry differs whenever we actually grow rice in these different soils. And then we also plan to examine how common fertilizers affect this chemistry. One in particular we're interested in Arkansas is ammonium sulfate, which is commonly used on our rice fields. I'd like to thank my advisor for all of his help in this project, Dr. Trent Roberts, as well as my other co-authors and my fellow graduate students. I'd also like to thank the Arkansas Rice Research and Promotion Board for funding this project. Are there any questions? Yes, ma'am. Yes, the actual first research on this was done in Japan. They had a lot of this. They also call it autumn decline. It's just another term for this disorder, and they saw it. Research papers back in the 40s were looking at the production of this. Yes, sir. Whenever we had our soil test report done, they were able to actually split it between the ferrous iron and the ferric iron in their analysis. They used Malic 3 for that.
So this was extractable?
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am, they do. Primarily urea. Oh, no, just typically urea or ammonium sulfate. Yes, sir?
Do you suggest any practical solution to
it? Do we have a practical solution? Not yet. We're doing really the legwork of this research, trying to figure out what different components are causing this production of hydrogen sulfide. And so ultimately, yes, we'd love to have a practical solution to this, but we're not at that point yet. Moving the water? Well, our rice fields are under continuous flood, so that's not really a very good option for our farmers. Yes. 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 That is our only solution to this problem right now, to tell farmers whenever they have this happen, if they don't drain the field, it won't go away, and then they'll lose yield. So they're really faced with that problem of, do we drain the field and potentially lose yield from that, or do we just let this go? So that's our only management practice right now.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.